Tim Z. Hernandez. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Our special guest today is debut memoirist Joseph Leza, out with his new book, I'm Never Fine, Scenes and Spasms on Loss, and that is out with Vine Leaves Press. About the author, Joseph is a writer and proud son of Italian immigrants. He currently resides on the East Coast, where he bides his time between autumn sporting a pair of white chucks and drinking obscene amounts of coffee. Holding an MFA in creative writing from right here at the University of Texas in El Paso, his work has been nominated for many anthologies and special prizes as well. He's been published in Variant Literature, The Hopper, Oculum Journal, and several other journals. He spends his time worrying about why he's not writing whenever he's not writing. So with that, I look forward to getting into this conversation and invite you to join us right now, right here on Words on a Wire with Joseph Leza.
Words on a wire.
Words on a wire. Wire.
Joseph Leza, welcome to Words on the Wire, my brother. How are you?
I'm very good, Tim. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure and an honor to have you with us. You know, I've known you by way of the UTEP writing program and also just became really familiar with your work at that time. But watching you sort of come up and, you know, get this beautiful book, which was a manuscript published, it's just been a real privilege for me to see that progress and to see that sort of take shape. How have things been for you?
It's been good. You know, it's been kind of crazy. You know, when you consider how much time was spent, you know, actually writing it in the writing program, and then after graduating, you know, revising, editing, submitting, you know, all of the development work that goes into actually making a book after a publisher decides with their grace to bring it into the world. And so many people have asked me this same question, like, how do you feel? Like, how has it been? And quite literally the best analogy I can come up with is, like, I feel like a child who's just let go of his balloon. Again, like, I've just been holding on to it for so long, and now it's just like, I've given it to the wind to just sort of carry it away, and I'm just staring at it from the ground like, well, there it goes.
Yeah, you know what? Let me ask you about that, because I feel that comment. I feel what you're saying. Do you feel like, let me dig into that a little bit. Do you feel like there is still some part of you that is, you know, because like you said, you work on this manuscript and you work on these stories and essays for years. They're a part of you. You live with them. And then you have to work through the vulnerability of them. And so because of that, you end up having a kind of attachment to your material that by the time it becomes a book, as you said, it's no longer yours and gets released into the world. Do you find like you're still trying to, at times, to sort of let go of that material? Or do you very much, or are you already like, you know what, it's no longer mine now, it's in the world?
It's a mix of both. I mean, I think in a, you know, as a writer, it'll always be mine, like to some extent, but it's actually been somewhat freeing to let it go. I think some of the most difficult parts for me were just thinking about and sort of reckoning with people who were very close to me, you know, people who I have very close relationships with, who were close to me at the time that all of the, you know, incidents in the book, close to me at that time, like when all of those incidents occurred, you know, getting to be privy to these very sort of vulnerable moments that are, you know, some moments are light and wonderful, but, you know, it's a book about grief. It's a book about loss and the sort of crazy, irrational, dark places that it can take you. And, you know, if I was going to be truthful in this book, I had to talk about, you know, everything, even some of the things that I wasn't quite proud of. And so the hard part for me, I think, was wondering what the people who I'm closest to were going to think. Like, was it going to change their perception of me? Was it going to change our relationship in some way? When it comes to perfect strangers, like people that I don't know across the country, you know, perhaps across the world reading this book, I I couldn't like, I couldn't worry less about it because it's like, I don't have a relationship there to sort of like worry about. Right. And you can, and you know, you can be freer with strangers than you can with the people who you're closest to. So for me, in some way, like, I think I'll always have some level of possession over the story because it is my story, but it has been somewhat freeing to sort of let it go in the world because, and it's been very sort of duplicative to the writing process because, you know, part of writing the book itself was my version finally of being able to come to terms with all of these things that I was dealing with and carrying around with me. And the act of writing was freeing in its own sense. And now the act of actually releasing it into the world is kind of like another layer to that.
Right, right. And for the listeners out there, the book that we are talking about is titled "I'm Never Fine." It's and you know it's a fantastic, I guess, in the description, it's a collage memoir of essays and poetry. But I think more importantly, it's also your debut book. You know, do you feel like for those who have read it and have responded to you, what's been whether strangers or family, what's been the feedback that they've given you, has it been, you know, how's that been for you?
It's been interesting. Like I'm rather overwhelmed by the people who have responded to it, sort of across the board. You know, I think that whenever you're dealing with people who are, again, like especially close to you, I think it might be somewhat difficult for, you know, people who actually bore witness to the events to critique the work because, you know, they experienced them too from their own vantage points. And, you know, having them read the book is also sort of asking them to relive it. So, you know, I sort of, you know, when it comes to any sort of, you know, feedback or, you know, positive, however positive or negative response that I might get from somebody that I'm close to, you know, I sort of allow them the space to, you know, just have their, you know, have their opinion said. And, but like, truthfully, strangers and non-strangers, I've actually been quite overwhelmed by the response and it's, you know, large positivity. I mean, even some of the writers that I reached out to in the early periods when I was looking for individuals, you know, with a bit more clout than I have to potentially read the book and, you know, and endorse it. You know, I was reaching out to writers who I never thought I'd ever have a conversation with in my entire life, much less ask them to read, you know, a very vulnerable piece of work. And to have these people that I so admire and respect, you know, just be so gracious and, you know, just absolutely overwhelmingly thoughtful in their response and in their, you know, and their feedback has been, I still have to go back and reread those emails sometimes because I'm not sure that they actually showed up.
Yeah, you know, and one of those, one of the reviewers, one of the blurbs on your book is by the wonderful writer Raquel Gutierrez, essayist, who has a fantastic book titled Brown Neon. And she wrote, of your book, she wrote, "Hearty and full-throated, a voice that helps navigate the trembling waters of grief any of us have ever endured." You know, and I couldn't agree with you. I couldn't agree with that more. You know, when I was, when you were in the writing program and I was privileged to read some of your work, that's one of the things I have always recognized that was in your work is this really strong sense of, I won't say fearless, but definitely courage, a courageousness in the vulnerability of the things you write, which is what we look for, at least what I look for in a good book, especially good essays. What was the hardest part of writing a memoir like this? What was the, for you, what was the hardest aspect of writing these pieces?
I mean, one of the hard parts again was obviously just sitting down and really putting myself to task when it came to re-examining, you know, some of the most difficult chapters of my life. And it was hard, but it was also necessary because I was doing so, you know, I started writing the book probably, you know, in earnest with it in the program, which was, you know, 2018, 2019, at that point, I was about 5-6 years separated from my father's passing. Right. And that amount of time had, you know, had given me enough distance to sort of have a different perspective when I went back and I sort of, you know, placed myself back into these different vignettes. And, you know, I was able to see things and to glean things that I couldn't in the moment because I was just so immersed in it. And I was just so, you know, clouded by all of the emotions that I was feeling at the time. So yeah. Obviously that was difficult, but another difficult, and I would say the most difficult part, and yeah. I think I actually spoke about this when I, you know, defended the manuscript, was, you know, there, by doing so, you know, by putting yourself back in this position where you're re-examining these moments of your life, you're not only re-examining how you reacted to something, you're also re-examining how other people reacted to it, and perhaps being a bit judgmental. The one thing that I absolutely positively did not want to do in this book was to make a villain out of anyone. Like I don't have the authority to do so. And it's not about airing dirty laundry. It's not about, you know, telling tales out of school. So anytime I came to one of those specific junctures where, you know, I had to deal with, you know, some aspect of a particular chapter that in the moment I had judged harshly, I made sure in each one of those moments that I took the time to also examine what that person's perspective was, why they may have acted the way that they acted, because, you know, the whole nexus of the book is that there's no one right way to grieve somebody. You know, you will run into a thousand articles that will parrot these same, you know, quote unquote, 5 stages of grief, and they organize it in all these nice, neat little buckets. And they tell you, oh, it's going to happen this way. You're going to go through these 5 stages and then you're going to be great. You're going to be fine. Everything's going to be wonderful. And it doesn't happen that way. Like, it just doesn't happen that way. No. Like, some people get stuck in one stage. Some people have 27 stages. Like, they just don't happen in that neat little order. So for me to write a book about how, you know, there's no one way to grieve, and at the same time, you know, pass judgment on somebody for grieving incorrectly, so to speak, would have been, you know, completely, you know, it would have been disingenuous. And so that was the hard part. It was making sure that, you know, I took the time to not only examine things from my point of view, but to examine at least theoretically how somebody else may have been, you know, receiving and processing something.
Right, right. And in that way, I think that I like to think of writing as a real practice of compassion, or toward compassion, for that reason, you know, because when, just as you outlined beautifully and clearly there, you know, when we take on a subject, and that subject, especially in nonfiction, whenever we are sort of questioning or probing that subject, we do have to turn that lens back on ourselves. That mirror we have to reflect, you know, upon ourselves too, and our role in this. And then also by that way, we suddenly find ourselves asking more compassionate questions, right? Why of the other, right? Why is that? And, you know, like you said, we just probe that very deeply in a way that allows us to see others' points of view. And to me, that's probably one of the most magical aspects of the act of writing. So I'm glad to hear you articulate that. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Because again, like as I kind of like alluded to, like you, if I hadn't had that time, you know, if I hadn't had that 5 to 6 years, whatever it was, and I had started writing it immediately, I would have been so biased by the way that I was feeling at the time that I would not have been able to deal with those memories fairly and to capture them fairly. So yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like I'm in a way thankful that it took as long as it did for me to finally decide to confront it on paper, because had I done so in the moment or shortly thereafter, it would have been, it wouldn't have been the story that it became.
Right. Right. Can I ask you something of a more personal question?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And not that you have to answer it, of course, but, you know, I know that you're also really close to your mother, and I'm wondering her response to the book.
I was probably most petrified of that. Like I will say, because again, because it comes back to what I was saying earlier, by my mother reading the book, you know, again, I was asking her to relive a very painful 15 months. I was asking her to relive the loss of her husband. Right. And not only that, but I was asking her, you know, I was sort of drawing the curtain back on a lot of very, again, dark sort of, you know, not super, you know, not moments that I'm not super proud of, sure. things that I never would have dreamt of sharing with my mother, that, you know, that the places that loss and grief and that sort of irrationality that is born out of it, took me. And so I was quite petrified. Like I, and there were even moments where I said like, hey, you know, maybe skip this one, maybe skip this particular chapter because it may be a little bit too difficult. And I sort of got like, you know, a shrug and sort of like a side eye, only to find out later on that she decided to just go ahead and read the whole thing.
Of course,
you know, she, I was very heartened because it was, you know, her response was effusive. It was incredibly supportive. And she, you know, not to sort of, there's no way to say this that doesn't sound like you're sort of patting yourself on the back. But I mean, you know, she, I think, was quite taken aback at my ability to sort of take the story and capture it the way that I did. Because I think that, I truly think that one of her fears throughout the whole writing process, knowing the subject matter that I was dealing with, was again, this concern that I might be, you know, using it as like a tool of vengeance or something like that, or, you know, or giving the world, you know, open access to, you know, an incredibly, you know, intimate and devastating chapter of our lives. And I assured her throughout the entire journey that like I was going to be as fair as I possibly could. But I think it wasn't until she was able to read it that those fears were assuaged a bit. But I was truly blown away because I was quite worried that it may, of all the relationships that, you know, after reading the book, that it may affect our relationship. And it did, but it did so positively. So I'm really happy about that.
No, that's great to hear. I've heard stories where things like that happen and they weren't positive outcomes, you know? And so it's always a scary endeavor, you know, for a writer to write their truth because it does involve other people, you know? So
it does, but when I think about moments that, you know, stuck with me from some of the books that I've read, and I'll just use like one of the most obvious examples, like one of the, you know, a memoir in the last couple of years that really gained a lot of notoriety was Cheryl Strayed's Wild, you know, helped out, of course, by the movie adaptation. But the book, you know, in the book, she shares some incredibly, you know, sort of self-sabotaging elements of her life that, you know, that she took part in that were, you know, like regular practices for her prior to her beginning this journey of like self-discovery or self-reclamation. But if she hadn't have shared those pieces, like you wouldn't have known how broken she was at the beginning and how necessary it was for her to take this journey. And I actually, not knowing her, obviously, but as a reader, I respected her for being brave enough to share those things, to share, you know, not only the beautiful, but the ugly, because it's important for balance.
It is important. You're right. And, you know, we trust, right? We put our faith and trust in writers with that kind of honesty, you know, to do that kind of work, because so that way we don't have to, you know, the rest of us don't have to.
Right. But I mean, you know, did my journey mirror hers exactly? Absolutely not. Right, but, you know, but it's about finding like the correlations, about finding the parallels. Like, you know, I wasn't, you know, luckily like substance abuse did not play a part in my story, but like I can see, like as a reader and just as a human, I can see like, you know, the weakness, the humanity, like the places that, you know, that very grief much takes you to in order to get, you know, or to deal with it, or to, you know, get through, or to numb it out, at least in the moment. And so I was completely able to empathize and relate in my own way, even if like my experience wasn't an exact replica of hers.
No, but yours was its own journey, you know?
Yeah.
And that's clear in this book. So for our listeners out there, our guest today is author Joseph Leza, whose debut memoir, I'm Never Fine, is out with, is it Vine? I'm sorry, I have the book right here. Let me open it. Vine Leaves Press, is that?
Yes, yeah.
Wonderful. And you know, also you have the book has a subtitle. I want to ask you about that. Scenes.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, scenes and I can't let you get away with that. Come on. So the title is I'm Never Fine, and then the subtitle is Scenes and Spasms on Loss. Tell me about the subtitle.
Well, you know, Tim, you had a lot to do with that, actually. I got to tell you, because I remember I remember distinctly when I was defending the manuscript at the end of my program, one of the questions you had to me was, because at the time it was just called I'm Never Fine, and one of your questions was, do you feel the title is too general? Is it too broad? Like, does it tell the reader what the book is about? And that stuck with me. That stuck with me long after the program. I was just like, oh, I think he's right. But, like, I was so committed to keeping the I'm Never Fine in some way, because it had come to me and just like this random flash, like that title actually came to me like mid conversation with a friend. And the minute I uttered the words, like I knew that it had to be the title of the book. When you challenged me on that, I said, okay, what is the solution? The solution is either changing the title entirely or I need to add a subtitle. And I decided a subtitle made more sense because the title, like, it not only does it correlate to one of the essays in the book, and it's kind of like the thesis statement, but the subtitle gave me an opportunity to be just a little bit more descriptive about what the book was. And I gotta admit, I had a list of subtitles and I went back and forth. One day I was like super happy with one. The next day I was like, this is crap. And so I was trying so hard. Like, my mission essentially was to like try to explain to the reader in like four words or less what they're getting themselves into. And, you know, was it going to be notes on something? Was it essays on something? And none of that felt right. For some reason, like the idea of scenes made sense, because it does, you know, the book is nonlinear. Like it does, you know, follow a sort of trajectory, but it happens very nonlinearly. So I liked the idea of scenes because it is very much like separate vignettes that tell a whole story, you know, when lined up next to one another. And spasms, the reason I chose spasms was because, you know, there is a sort of like convulsion that happens almost like when you are dealing with, you know, somebody with a terminal illness and you're dealing with treatment and everything, you are a clenched muscle that entire time. And the minute that loss happens, there is a release, but you kind of just like your muscles, just after being tensed for, you know, such an extended period of time, they kind of go haywire a bit. And so I liked that image. And I also liked the fact that spasms, like, has a bit of a humorous connotation, because the book does, or at least I try to, infuse humor in, you know, in the dialogue that I'm having, in the narrative that I'm building, because not because I think like, oh, this would be a great place for a joke, but because reflexively, that's just kind of what we do. Like grief does in some way, like when you watch some of the greatest comedians, of which I am not one, but when you watch some of the greatest comedians, like, they actually often deal with some like very dark topics that they're making, you know, that they're making fun of, like affect them personally, that are part of their own, you know, that are part of their own past, but they do it in a humorous light because it helps us to carry it. It helps us to deal with it. You know, otherwise you're walking around for the rest of your life with this massive weight on your shoulders. And if you can find a way to, you know, to make light of it, not, you know, to make a joke out of it, but to find the innate comedy in some of the most, you know, ludicrous situations that, you know, dealing with the terminal illness can find you in, it not only does it help with you, you know, after the fact, but it also is necessary in the moment, because, you know, you do need that release. You need to be able to let go at some point. Otherwise, you're just going to petrify. And so that's kind of how I came to scenes and spasms, because I wanted to obviously reflect that it was essentially a book that occurred across a series of vignettes, and that, you know, there were also some, you know, there were also some tantrums, some, you know, some comical moments that were, you know, to be found along the way.
Yeah, there is humor in this, definitely, even though, and it is part of the process. So it felt very natural and not forced at all. Just all the work in here, Joseph, is really incredible. And I don't say this lightly, but I have my sense tells me that, you know, with you, we're looking at a writer who has a long, wonderful, and successful career ahead, and we should all be paying attention to anything that you write from here on out. And I say that with all sincerity. The book is I'm Never Fine, Scenes and Spasms on Loss. The author, memoirist, is Joseph Leza. Joseph, it's been a pleasure talking to you, my friend.
Tim, it's been awesome talking to you and being able to reconnect. Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's our pleasure. And like I said, we're going to keep track of your career. We're going to keep bringing you back over time. All right.
Thank you. All right. I'll pencil it in right now.
All right, my friend, take care of yourself. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
And that wraps it up for today's show. I'd like to thank our special guest, Joseph Leza. Go pick up his memoir, I'm Never Fine. It's a fantastic book, as you heard yourself. Also want to thank our online and podcast producer, Claudia Flores, and our producer as well, Ileana Pichardo. Also want to thank our in-studio producer, Mr. Sam Casiano. And that's it for me. We'll see you next week, same time, same place, right here on KTEP 88.5 FM, your NPR station for the Southwest.